Building real-time applications with SignalR. That's what we're going to talk about today, and we're going to build 7 or 8, 9. I don't know. I've lost count at this point. My name is Brady Gaster, and I am a program manager on two different teams, on the Azure SDK team, and in that team, we build things like the XPLAT CLI tools for Linux and Mac, the Azure PowerShell commandlets. The product that I've mainly worked on has been one called the Microsoft Azure Management Libraries. I'm going to be doing a talk on that tomorrow, and that's how you can basically automate Azure from, you know, your native code. MAML is what we call it. It's not a fish. You get it? MAML? Never mind. We actually use MAML as a dependency underneath the PowerShell commandlets, and the portal also uses it, especially the new portal. So just want to point out that I'm going to be giving a talk on that tomorrow. That's really my main bread and butter. And then the other thing that I work on, has anybody ever done right-click publish website in Visual Studio? That's the other team I work on. That dialogue that pops open there, that's kind of the stuff we build out. I work very closely with the websites team to kind of bring those tools to life and make it easier for you to get your sites online. And throughout the demos today, I'll probably end up publishing a few sites using that product. So that's the deal. I'm going to be giving a talk on MAML tomorrow. So if you're interested in automating Azure, you want to learn more about that, I highly recommend that you come out. Somebody really likes slow animations. Okay. Again, I'm Brady Gaster. That's what I do. That's how you can find me. I do want to point out, everybody at Microsoft has a couple of specialty areas. Mine is going to be ASP.NET, SignalR, Azure, websites, MAML, et cetera, et cetera. If you email me a question about how to capture a skeleton using the Connect SDK, I'm probably going to bounce you to somebody like Clint Rutkus or Dan Fernandez or the Connect team. One of the things that you learn at Microsoft, your first day at orientation, they go through all these numbers and they tell you a bunch of different numbers about, you know, how many of this we've sold, how many of that we've sold, how many customers we have, blah, blah, blah. My favorite one of those numbers is how many emails are sent internally to @microsoft.com addresses every single day. That number is 25 million. I get about 40% of those emails, okay? So if you email me, I promise you that I'll get back to you, but I may redirect you. It's not because I'm not interested in helping you out. Sometimes redirecting you is the best way to help you out because you don't want me to tell you how to read a skeletal data from a Connect, how to manage your IaaS VMs, stuff like that. So a lot of us do that. We just bounce you to different people. But if you have any questions about the topics that you see me present this week, I can probably answer those questions. But again, that's my email address, my website, bradygaster.com. Twitter is bradygaster. Pretty much every social media outlet out there, you can find me using that username. Here's my blog. This is built using an open source tool called MiniBlog that my buddy Mads Christensen wrote. So I want to point out that there's me, obviously. There's my Twitter, so you can find me out there. And now we'll get into the stuff that you're here to talk about. Enough about me. This is the ASP.NET page for SignalR. It's just ASP.NET/SignalR, pretty easy to find. We do the same thing for things like web API. You just do web-API, et cetera, et cetera. So I just want to point out that if you want to go out and learn more about SignalR, which I'd highly recommend that you do, you can go to ASP.NET, whack SignalR, and party with it. And then if you're interested in making the product better, it is open source, just like the rest of everything in ASP.NET, any framework, and you know all this other stuff that we put out. The project is actually out on GitHub. This is how I discovered it, probably about a year and a half, 2 years ago, maybe more, I can't remember. I guess I've been at Microsoft almost 3 years, so it's been almost 3 years ago that I discovered it. And when I saw it, I kind of had one of those moments where, like, everything changed. Every single thing I knew about web programming completely changed. And I can sum it up in a couple of slides. I'll be, you know, kind of getting to that. But SignalR is, in my opinion, one of the more groundbreaking web technologies that we've released recently. And I think one of the nice things about SignalR is that it was always open source. And the guys that wrote it, David and Damien, the rest of their team, they've basically committed to always maintaining it as an open source product. So if you want to contribute to it, feel free to do so. at one point somebody contributed like an iOS client for SignalR, and there's all other kinds of stuff going on out there. For a while, it was actually the number one most watched .NET project on GitHub. In a matter of 2 years, it went from being two guys, you know, working on the weekends in their underwear, you know, drinking coffee, to the most watched project on GitHub. So I thought that was kind of neat. I think that that sends a message to us that people really like SignalR and that they're definitely invested in it. All right. So you know I love it. I'm the SignalR cheerleader. So what are we going to talk about today? I'm going to tell you what SignalR is. I'm going to tell you what SignalR is not. One thing that I do want to point out to you, SignalR is one of those things that once you see it, everything looks like a nail. Okay? Be careful. Remember the Spider-Man rule. With great power comes great responsibility. You can't inject SignalR everywhere as much as you would like to do so. I've actually answered questions from people before where they're like, I saw SignalR, I wanted to implement it in a solution, I stuck it over here, and now I'm trying to work up all this architecture around it. My response to them is, you've done something wrong. You know what I mean? You've just injected SignalR where it didn't necessarily need to be. One of the things that SignalR is not is durable messaging. A lot of people contrast it to PubSub using queues. That's a completely different type of technology. SignalR is for real-time HTTP. So, you know, maybe one out of every 100 messages is going to get dropped. But it's not for durable messaging. I just want to stress that. It's for some other stuff. And you'll probably get some clues as to what that other stuff is as we're walking through this today. So I just want to point out that there are some places where you're not going to want to use it. Good example of that. I've seen people that have, like, you know, fallen in love with SignalR, and they start going through their web applications and replacing every single place where they've got some sort of a REST API with SignalR. Don't do that either, okay? Don't do that. Don't use SignalR to do things like transmit your credit card data back to your server. Why? You might lose one out of every 100 or 1,000 messages. Don't want to lose somebody's credit card. All right, so just be careful with it. It is a fantastic toy. It's being used in a lot of different production environments. A couple of banks are using it. A couple of theme parks are using it. So you can bank on it. We're actually using it in some of our own products, AKA Browser Link, one of the things that Mads built in Visual Studio recently. Anybody seen Browser Link? It's nice, right? Okay, so that's built on top of SignalR. So just want to point that out. So we're going to talk about what is SignalR. I'm going to tell you about the Hub class, which is kind of the cornerstone of development with SignalR. We're going to talk about how to do stuff with it using jQuery, which is kind of what it's based on top of. It's the one dependency on the client side. And we're going to talk about how to use it with Angular. Obviously, we're making a huge investment in Angular, and we really, really enjoy that new JavaScript framework. But there's a couple of nuances that you probably want to know about to inject SignalR into Angular, and I'm going to show you how to do that today. And then we're just going to go through a whole gamut of other stuff. All right. So the first thing, what is SignalR? This is the part where the hair on the back of your neck might start to stand up, because some of these words should not go together. SignalR is an abstraction that intelligently decides how to enable real-time over HTTP. Bzz. Why does that not make sense to a lot of people? What is HTTP? Stateless protocol. How do you do real-time over a stateless protocol? There's about 6 or 7 different ways. So you could learn each one of those ways, and whenever the technology evolves, and there's a better way, you could change your code around. Sounds like fun, right? Of course not. Or you just write to the SignalR abstraction, and whenever those new real-time methodologies are injected into SignalR, you don't have to change any of your code. Okay, I just want to point that out. SignalR is really, really smart, and it figures out what the client and what the server can do. So the best way to really talk about SignalR is to see it in action. Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and start off with a really quick demo. Then I'm going to explain to you exactly what's going on in that demo, and then we're going to tweak the demo a little bit and see how we can make it party on top real time. All right, so I want to go ahead, pull up my screen, close down GitHub, and I've got the portal open because we're going to be using it here in a moment. Cool. And we do have a lot of ground to cover today, and I'm going to definitely be going pretty quick. I'll be around for questions, and you can hit me up on Twitter or whatever. Let's kind of hold some questions till the end. I'll totally be here. I have no more talks today. I have nothing to do this afternoon. So I can sit around and talk about SignalR as long as you guys want to ask questions. All right? So I'm in Visual Studio right now. I need to close this little bubble. Uh-oh. Sorry. So I'm going to go ahead and do a new project. I'm going to select an ASP.NET web app. I'm just going to call it real quickly, hit counter. This is my favorite way to kind of start off SignalR, because it takes an old thing that you've probably done before when you wrote your very first Java applet, and then you kind of didn't want to do it again. But we're going to do a hit counter in SignalR. And I like it because it's just a really simple, easy to understand demo that kind of gets the point across pretty quickly. All right, so I've just made one little simple web app here. And now I'm going to need to install the SignalR NuGet package. That's the only thing you need to do. So I'm going to right-click on my solution right here. Oh, right-click this guy and say Manage NuGet Packages. Go up here. I don't want updates. Do online, SignalR. Pardon me. So we've got ASP.NET SignalR right here. Now, there's a bunch of other SignalR guys in here, and we'll kind of talk about some of those NuGet packages today. The first one is what you want to do if you're doing SignalR inside of a web app. Later on, we're going to talk about the .NET client for SignalR. You see the second one there, the SignalR core components. That's what you'd want to install if you want to use like server-side SignalR and do stuff inside of a .NET client. There's another one that's SignalR.js. That's the JavaScript stuff inside of SignalR that has a dependency on jQuery. The SignalR guys have componentized their NuGet packaging into very, very small pieces that depend on one another, you know, as needed, so that whenever you install them, you'll just get all the dependencies for free. All right? So I'm going to go ahead and install this package real quick. Please be good, internets. Click accept. There we go. There we go. All right, so I'll close this guy out. Now, the first thing that's going to happen when you install SignalR into your web app is it's going to pop open a README. In SignalR 1 and prior to 1, this README was a little bit different. It said you're going to want to put everything to wire up your hubs into your global ASAX. We've made a significant investment in Owen. You probably heard people talking about Katana and Owen this week. Anybody heard about Owen? We've made a very significant investment in Owen, and that's how SignalR is hosted now. You no longer have to wire it up in your global ASAX. You have to make an Owen startup class and then map your SignalR hubs in there. Now, what do I mean when I say map your hubs? It's very similar in nature to mapping a route in MVC or Web API. It's pretty much exactly the same thing. You just have to route the server so that it knows how to get back to your hub whenever people make a call back over HTTP to get to it. And this README file tells you exactly what to do. So I'm going to go ahead right here and do Control-Shift-A to add a new file. I'm going to do a quick search, look for Owen. I'm going to select this startup class right here. Uh-oh. There we go. And you'll see that it's just going to go ahead and drop this class in. And all I need to do is to say app.mapSignalR. There we go. And what that's going to do is it's basically going to tell the server how to route every inbound connection that makes a request back to a hub, which I'm going to do next. That just routes everything. So that's the one step that you have to do in terms of configuring SignalR to get it to party. But you can't forget that, and the guys on the team knew that you probably would forget that. I forget it all the time. So they just give you a quick little README in there when you install the package to kind of get you up and running. By the way, in the back, is the code visible? Scream really loudly if it's not. Okay, cool. Cool. All right. I could boost it if need be. Just yell. All right, so I've got my startup. Now I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to say add. Where is it? SignalR hub class, right here. We've actually dangled it off the menu. And I'm going to call this guy the hit counter hub. And what you're going to see is that it's going to create a very simple class with a little hello method in it. And that class is going to inherit from hub. That's the SignalR hub class. I'm going to talk a little bit about what the hub class is during this part of the talk. When I'm going to call this guy from the client, I'm going to have to call it with a name. So I'm going to have to call it right now. I would just say, give me the hit counter hub. I'm going to have to give it a name. I don't like having to, you know, call it a hub on the client side. I'm a little persnickety about that kind of thing. So I'm going to give it a custom name. So I'm just going to pull in the hub name attribute real quick, and I'll just call this guy hit counter. So there we go. And that's just going to give me a name that I can call it from on the client. All right. I'm going to do something you should probably never do inside of a web app. Make a static variable, 0. Now, what you'd probably want to do in your own code is save that to an application variable, a database, storage, somewhere else. Don't use a static variable. As soon as you bounce your server, your hit count's going to reset to 0. Just be careful. It's a demo. Forgive me. And I'm going to give this guy a method, public void record hit. Oh, that's not good. Record hit. All right, so it's going to go ahead and put that in. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to zoom in real quick. Why is this not compiling? see. There we go. I usually don't party with ReSharper, but my demo that I'm going to do tomorrow, I have a couple of unit tests that I want to run in XUnit, and I really like the ReSharper XUnit test runner. So if you see me kind of fudging some of my keystrokes, it's because I'm really just not used to some of the ReSharper commands. I'm not a ReSharper user. Nothing against the product. Fantastic product. So in the record hit method, I'm basically going to say hit count is plus equal to 1. And this is where it gets kind of interesting. So I'm going to zoom in on, so I'm going to say this, because I am a hub. And now I'm going to look at clients right here. Since we're talking about real time, what the hub does is it provides me this abstraction that I can use to get to the different clients that happen to be connected to this hub. It's named very appropriately, hub and spoke model. You got a hub in the center and all the clients are spokes and they reach in and they talk to it. So I'm just going to go ahead and select clients here. Now, what do you think the property would be in a logical naming convention? What do you think the property would be here if I wanted to call all of the clients from the server? All. All. What do you think it's going to be if I just want to call back to the client that called me? Think caller looks right? That's it. What do you think the property name is going to be if I want to call everybody but me? Others? Pretty logical, right? Just want to point that out. Now, this is where you might have one of those hair on the back of your neck moments. I did too. Let me show you why. See all right there? Dynamic expression. Okay? So SignalR is basically built pretty heavily on top of async and on top of dynamic. When I first discovered this, I cringed a little bit. I wasn't really sure how I felt about dynamic in C#. I still had a little bit of heartburn about it until I learned how to use SignalR. Once I learned how to use SignalR, dynamic made a lot more sense to me, and I hope it will to you as well. I hope you'll have the same reaction. So what I want to do now is I'll say on hit recorded. And now I'm going to pass it hit count. And there we go. And that's all I got to do. I'm done. I'm done creating my hub. It's a pretty simple demo. So now I'm going to go back to my project. I want to add a new file. I want to add an ASPX page. It could be an HTML page, but I'm just going to add this just so I make sure when I hit the server, my server stuff lights up. Now I've just got a pretty simple form here. And what I'm going to do first is I'm going to go over here to scripts. I'm going to drag in jQuery. I'm going to go ahead and put a new line here, and then I'm going to drag in SignalR. On the client side, the only dependency that SignalR has is on jQuery. Okay? You can dial it in with Angular. We're going to talk about that here in a moment. But they built this on top of jQuery because it has something like 55% of the web market share. So it kind of made sense. Seemed like a low barrier to entry, if you will. So I've got these guys included, and I'm all ready. And I do want to point out, you got to pull them in that order. I want to put one more guy right here, div ID is equal to hit count. And I'll give this a style, font size, I'll make this 200 px. Will that exceed the dimensions? I just want it to be pretty visible. That should do it. So I want to create a new script here. Go ahead and pull in JavaScript. And I'm going to say function. There we go. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to new up a connection. And you'll see that the nomenclature for SignalR is pretty logical. I know it's going to have some sort of a jQuery plugin since that's my dependency. So I want to do $dot hub connection. Okay? And if I wanted to, I could give it a URL here. But I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to go directly to that actual hub. All right? So now I'm going to create the hub itself. I'm going to say con.create hub proxy. I need to call it what I put into that hub name attribute. That hub name attribute is going to trump everything. So if I just say hit counter hub here, it's not going to find it since I've got that hub name attribute stuck on it. There's also method name attributes. You can come up with your own custom method names that you'd be calling from the client if, in fact, that's what you wanted to do. All right? So now that that's all good, it's going to do hub.on. Whenever the hub tells me to do something, I want you to do something. I'll do this. What did I call that method? On hit recorded. And so whenever the hub says, I want you to run the on hit recorded method, you're going to want to do something. What are you going to want to do? Whatever I put inside of here. So I'll go ahead and do this guy. And now I'm going to say, what is it, hit count? Oh, that's really dangerous. OK. Call it hit count. All right, there we go. Hit count. Text is going to be I. All right, there we go. And I've wired that stuff up, and basically that's an event handler for all intents and purposes. Whenever the hub tells me to do something, I want you to run this method. And it's named pretty appropriately, on. All right. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to say con.start. Go ahead and do that. And then I have to invoke a method on the server. So I'm going to go ahead and do hub.invoke. Record hit. All right. Now if I do this, it's not going to work. First time I played with SignalR, I tried this and it didn't work. Basically, whenever I tried to invoke a method on the hub, I would get a JavaScript error. Why was that happening? Because the connection had not been instantiated yet. So I thought to myself, I wonder if those guys made it convenient enough that I could just go ahead and pass in a callback right here. And it worked. All right, so what's going to happen is I'm going to instantiate a connection back to the server. I'm going to start that connection. Once that connection is started, I'm going to invoke a method on my hub. All right? Whenever the hub tells me to run the onHitRecorded event handler, I'm going to run that callback that I just passed in there. I want to go ahead and close this guy down. Just hit F5 real quick. All right, so that's going to pop open in Chrome for no reason. If I just do F5, oh, that's great, Brady. That's fantastic, fantastic demo you got there. See if I can make it a little bit more interesting. All right, I'll open up another one. Now we've got all these guys counting in real time. So that's pretty cool. It's kind of a neat way to show off what SignalR can do in terms of being able to send messages back down to the clients. But it doesn't really demonstrate one really interesting feature, and that's the fact that SignalR will also know whenever these clients are going to disconnect. So the way you implement that, I'll go back into my hit counter hub here. I'm just going to do override on disconnected, and we're just going to run this guy in reverse. I got to subtract it. And you look at this and you can think, wait. Do you mean the server is going to know whenever a client actually disconnects? Yeah. If I close my web browser, the server is going to know and that hub method is going to run for me. Who thinks it's going to not work? Come on. I'm going to go ahead and run this guy one more time, pop up in a new browser, pop it up in another new browser, hit refresh. You see what's going on there? I'm not connected just for a second while I'm re-instantiating the connection. Now when I close things back down, it's going to know that those clients are actually disconnecting from that hub. Is that pretty cool? Does that kind of make it clear? Awesome. We're not here to talk about hit counters. I promise we're going to make it more interesting. But what I want to do now is I want to show you how that worked. Okay? Now, earlier I said that SignalR can intelligently decide the best way to handle real time. Now, what do I mean by that? How many of you have ever had a PM come to you or a business owner and they say, I want it to respond immediately. I want, whenever something happens on the server, I want the client to automatically update. And you kind of short circuit and you go, I guess I could poll. You can't really do outbound, really, can you? I mean, like, how do I do that? So you probably did something like this. You wrote the client so that it would say, got data. And then the server goes, yeah. And then you just, got data, and you start all over again. Okay? The nice thing about it is, that's exactly what SignalR is going to do if you're running on a down-level browser or an old web server. Okay, it's smart enough to figure out that the client or the server lacks support for things like server send events or our favorite WebSockets. And if in fact the server or the client don't support that kind of stuff, it's going to fall back down and figure out how to do things with maybe server send events, forever frame, et cetera, et cetera. Now, let's say you're running in Azure websites and you've got support for WebSockets. How's it going to work now? Well, the client's going to say, hey, I can do real time. Can you? And that call actually happens here as well. And pretty much you can imagine what would happen. The server or the client's going to say, no, I don't support real time. But in this case, the client's going to say, hey, I support real time. I support service and events or WebSockets. Do you support it? The server's going to say, yep. And then the server and the client are going to go, all right, let's party in real time. Okay, so then there's an open connection back to the server. And you're going to be basically going back and forth over WebSockets. Somebody out there in the audience is probably thinking to themselves, well, IIS can only support N number of connections, da, 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 and if it gets overloaded, if all these guys are constantly connected to the server, it's gonna freak out, right? No. The reason why is, SignalR is built almost entirely on top of asynchronous programming. So all those connections back to the server, whenever you're doing WebSockets or something else, are not gonna block the threats. So you can have, basically limitless connections in terms of, parting in real time. Just to give you an idea, we have a pretty serious team at Microsoft called the stress testing tool, or the stress testing team, and what they do is they basically just stress everything out, including us, all right? So they just load up the server, they load up the client, they figure out how much load something could take. In their stress tests of SignalR, what do you think the first thing that fell down was? Think it was the CPU, because there's so many connections? No. Think it was memory? Nope. It was a network card. They had to put a 10 gigabit network card into the testing machine before they could actually keep the network card from falling down. Does that mean you're gonna have to have 10 gigabit network cards and all of your servers are gonna be running SignalR? No, because you're not the stress testing team at Microsoft. You don't know how to make it be a requirement that you need a 10 gigabit network card. And so I just wanna point that out. Now one thing I wanna demonstrate real quickly, so I wanna go back over here to my web app, which I've closed down, unfortunately. Open this guy back up. I'm just gonna show you this real quickly inside of a browser so you can actually see what's going on in the network. To do that, I'm gonna have to deploy this out to Windows Azure websites. Excuse me, Microsoft Azure websites. All right, today. Actually, I'm not gonna do that. What I'm gonna do now is I'm gonna show you one other really, really quick demo. And when I show this to you, I'll be able to show you this piece of functionality in here as well. So what I wanna do is I wanna select this move shape demo. This is one of Damien's favorite demos. It's actually a really, really neat demo. So I'm gonna pull up this guy real quickly, copy the URL out over here, paste it into this guy. And what I'm gonna do now is I'm gonna take this and I'm just gonna move it around. All right. So you can imagine all the gaming possibilities that you could do with this. I'm gonna copy this URL one more time and I'm gonna open it up in Internet Explorer because I wanna use Internet Explorer's debugging tools. You'll see that it's actually working in both browsers. If I move it up there, you can see it. So it's definitely going to be a cross-browser thing. Oh, somebody out there is messing with me. Please don't do that. Not right now. And this is really kind of a bummer. Check this out. See if I can do this. I love this thing. I got so excited when I got in here because I was thinking, oh, I'll be able to do this. Doesn't support touch. I'd have to add the JavaScript support for touch here. Total bummer. So, but we have another demo that we'll be able to use that for in a second. All right, so what I want to do is I want to go over here and I want to hit F12. And I'm going to turn on my network monitoring and just hit F5 right here. And what you'll see is this URL right here was a request that I made. And what's important about that URL is this guy right here. You'll see that it's got, You'll see that it's got this thing right here that says forever frame. Okay, that's because SignalR has figured out that the best thing to do real time that this client and browser support right now, that this server and this client support is gonna be forever frame, can't do server send events. And maybe the server doesn't have WebSockets enabled, so we're not able to do WebSockets. Dang. So we're kinda doing a polling thing there, but again, remember SignalR is intelligent enough to figure out what to do. So let me go back over to my portal here. I wanna go into my move shape demo. I'm gonna go up here to configure. I'm going to scroll down, maybe. And you'll see that I can enable WebSockets right here. So I'm just gonna save that. I'm going to restart my site just to be super safe. I want to go back over here and refresh this guy. And now what you're going to see is that there's no forever frame guy. That's the WebSocket connection. So that shows you how SignalR is smart enough to interrogate what's going on the server and what's going on the client and to figure out the best thing that it can do to support real time. And in this case, we are really, really real time. There's no polling going on, because we've got WebSockets enabled. So that's good stuff. So since somebody out there is having fun with my demo, I'm going to go ahead and regain control. So now my site stopped. Cool. All right. I'll point that out. All right. Now, any Angular developers out there? So you're probably panicking a little bit, but I don't want to use jQuery. I want to use Angular. Well, you can use Angular, but you've got to have the jQuery component because that is a dependency of SignalR. Nice thing is, jQuery and SignalR play really well together. So I'm just going to run through some code real quick and just show you exactly how you would dial something in with Angular and SignalR. Go back over here to my demos. And yes, I know I'm not on screen. SignalR. Where is it? All right. There we go. So while I'm opening up VS, I'm going to tell you like how I came to discover this little technique. I'm new to Angular. I've not done a whole bunch with Angular. So one day I went to Damien, who's really good at Angular, and I said, so how do I dial in SignalR with Angular? I'm trying to build this new app. Just so you know, I blogged about this app. I might show it off today. We have time. It's an app called Site Monitor. Okay. What I do is every time we release a new wave of technology, I'll go in and I'll just recreate Site Monitor. I created Site Monitor when I was on a host that wasn't Azure, and my site seemed to be going up and down, and I didn't like that. So I created Site Monitor and just had a little monitor open on my computer, and I would just know whenever the site was going to, you know, die. The way I knew that is I had a box on the screen that was green or red, and I just had a process running that would just go out, hit it, hit my site, see if it came back. If it came back, it would turn the box green. If my site was down, it would turn the box red, and then I could call the hosting company and say, ah, it's down. So, yeah, it's a little obsessive, but that's some of the best code that's written is, you know, code that you want to write to, you know, solve a problem that you've got. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to show you my scripts folder. I've pulled in the Angular package. And what I've done in this guy is I've created, find my app start. What I've done is I've created kind of a real-time tracing thing. So I'm going to open this guy up, and it's a trace hub. And it doesn't have anything in it. There's nothing in my trace hub, no methods, nothing to call. Remember, that hub, it's very appropriately named. You don't even have to put any code into that guy. It's really just a way for the client and the server to interact with one another. They just go through that hub, and you can just tell it that you know what it's going to do on either side, and it'll just work. So I've created my own custom trace listener here, and I've got a hub, and I'm going to add this trace listener to my application's list of trace listeners whenever this guy starts. All right? I've also created a filter, kind of silly. I've created a filter that I'm going to slap onto all of my controller methods. And what this is going to do is this is going to trace the MVC action that just got hit. It's just going to tell me which one, you know, somebody just hit on the client. Now, on the client side, I go into my views right here and open up home. I'm going to walk through kind of how this works. So again, I'm pulling in SignalR, and I've got jQuery pulled in on my template page, on my startup page. The first thing that I need to do here, there's actually a pretty good blog post out there by a guy outside of Microsoft that wrote this, and this is what Damien directed me to, so this is kind of what I was borrowing. You'll see that what I'm going to do first is I'm going to create my Angular application, and I'm going to tell it that whenever you ask for $, I want you to just use jQuery. That's a little trick where you can just tell Angular and jQuery to play nicely together. Next thing I'm going to do is I'm going to create Angular factory, and that's this guy right here, and I'm going to call this factory SignalR service. What Angular does whenever you use the factory approach is it will create that factory as a singleton, and all the code that you've got inside of that factory is going to run the entire lifetime of the page. That's really valuable because whenever you make your Angular controllers, you can feed in these factories with all the stuff that needs to be persisted. So inside of my factory, I'm going to new up my connection. Then I'm going to new up my hub. I'm going to dial it in terms of all the different events that I'm going to be able to receive. And then I'm going to bubble events up to the controller and let the controller do its work on the actual HTML. So you can see here that I'm going to create my hub proxy. Whenever I get trace received, I'm just going to fire the onTraceReceive JavaScript event. And then I'm going to start my connection. And I don't really need to do any work. I just need to sit there and wait. Now, if I scroll down here a little bit lower, we'll see that I've got my Angular controller right here. And in this controller, what I'm going to do is I'm going to pass in an instance of that SignalR service, and I'm actually going to pass in root scope here as well. I could use scope if I wanted to just scope to that controller, but root scope is going to give you that higher level higher level context. So I'll pass in root scope here, and then whenever the trace messages come in, I'm going to turn around and fire up a JavaScript event that this controller is going to catch. And the information that I'm getting back from that event, I'm just going to slap into a div right there in my page. This is my way of not doing a chat app, which is kind of the canonical example for SignalR. I do have a chat app demo later on. Apologies. I tried really hard to do a SignalR talk without having a chat app, because that's the one that everybody does. All right. So I'm going to zoom back out here, and then I'm just going to initialize that service, which calls this method right here to start up that factory and start partying. So I'm going to go ahead and run this guy real quick. This is going to pop open. And what I'm going to do here is fire up a new browser and paste this guy in. And what you'll see is that as I hit pages on the site, it's going to get written to trace because I've got that trace filter on every single action. And the trace listener is going to turn around, call SignalR, and then SignalR is going to just drop that trace message directly into the client. This is really helpful in situations like if you're running Azure worker roles and you want to see diagnostics from what those worker roles are doing, you can actually do the same approach and just bubble the trace messages from your worker role into some sort of client. And then whenever the client's connected, you can watch. Whenever it's not, you're not watching. So just want to point that out. It's one little technique that I've used in a couple of different apps. Just to kind of show off how you can dial in tracing with SignalR and show stuff in real time on your client. All right, so now I'm going to jump on to the next demo here. That'd be it. Okay. Switch over to this guy. Oh, sorry. That's wrong. So I've talked to you about the JavaScript client, but one thing that I do want to point out is that there's also a native .NET client as well. You're not limited with SignalR to being able to do things only on the web. You can dial in SignalR into your native .NET applications as well. And I've got a quick little demo that I'm going to pull up here that kind of builds on one of the demos we've already seen, kind of builds on top of that move shape demo. While this is opening up, Damien comes into Channel 9. I used to be a Channel 9 host, and I interviewed David and Damien to talk about SignalR. Damien pulls up this demo and he shows it to me and I kind of start giggling and I say to myself, I'm like, dude, that's really cool. I'd like to hook that up with a Connect. And it was that move shape demo that I just showed you. And Damien kind of laughs and he says, you know, it's really funny that you say that because some guy out there on the internet has created a blog post where he uses the Connect, SignalR, and Azure together to create a home security monitor. And it's like Damien on the right, David in the middle, and me on the left. Okay, I'm deaf in this ear, so I always have to stand on the right of everybody. So, he says that. David kind of looks at him for a second. Damien says, what? He goes, that was him. Damien's like, you did that? And I said, yeah. So ever since that demo, I've thought, wow, I'd really like to take Damien's move shape demo and make it really interesting by hooking it up to something like this. One of my favorite little pieces of technology. So I've got this Connect right here. And what you'll see is that I've got all that code from the move shape demo running over here on the website. And I'm going to look at my references real quick. And you'll see that I'm actually pulling in this guy right here, the microsoft.asp.net.signalr.client. That's going to be the .NET client for SignalR. I've shown you how easy it is to do SignalR using HTML. And it seems like kind of a fun option. Sounds like it's going to be really hard to do this in .NET, right? Nope, it's not. And the reason why is that the SignalR team said, guys, we really want to make this API super discoverable and super consistent across .NET and JavaScript. They not only made it consistent, they almost achieved parity. The only difference between the JavaScript client and the .NET client is one's Pascal cased, one's Camel cased. That's pretty much it. So you'll see here that I've got this class. I've got an instance of a class called a hub connection. Whenever you do that hub connection thing inside of jQuery, this is what you're going to be instantiating on the client. Whenever you do that create hub proxy, you're going to be creating an instance of a class that implements this guy right here, the iHub proxy interface. So you'll see that that logic is pretty much exactly the same. You just create these guys and party on them. Okay, so what about all the eventing? That's exactly the same as well. It looks exactly the same as the JavaScript code. You can see here, I'm going to new up a hub connection. This time I'm actually going to pass it a URL. Why do I have to pass it that URL? Because my hub lives on the server side. It actually lives inside of my web server, which is just going to be running here, right here on localhost. Then I'm going to call out to that hub from my .NET client, and I'm going to send it messages very similar to the messages that the browsers are going to send back and forth. Now, like I said before, I'm not really all that great at like Connect scalable tracking and whatnot, so I'm not going to waste your time looking through that code. Highly recommend that you go check out one of Clint's talks. There's a lot of great talks on Channel 9 about how to do stuff with the Connect. So I'm not going to go into that today. Oh, shoot. There we go. Okay. So now that that web is running, and remember, I have to run the website first because the daemon is not going to be able to connect to the website, to the hub, unless the guy containing that guy is running. Make sure this is still running. Yep, it is. right click this guy real quick and say debug and start the instance. And what's this going to be? A real simple console application that doesn't really have a whole bunch of logic to it. It's just really going to capture the scalable data and throw it up to that SignalR hub. So you can see here that I'm actually communicating with the SignalR hub from the .NET client, and on the JavaScript client, the JavaScript hub client is going to be doing its magic too. So you can kind of see here that we have a lot of different capabilities with SignalR from the .NET client and from the JavaScript client. So that's my silly little tweak on his demo. Thanks a lot. Appreciate that. Doing wonders for my ego today. Cool. How many of you are out there thinking, oh, I've got so many things I want to do with this now? Okay. Well, that's good, because one of the nice things about SignalR is that we can do all this really fancy interactive stuff. So we can actually have a lot of fun together today. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull up, I'm not really going to walk through the code because it's not really groundbreaking. It's all the same hub logic that you've already seen me do. But what I'll do instead of that is to pull up IE right here. And I'm going to go over to this guy. And I'm going to do a refresh on it real quick. And I'm going to show you that the URL is mappingdemo.azurewebsites.net. So you'll see right there that it's already dialed in where I am. This is sort of a silly demo because of the fact that we're all kind of in the same place. So we might not see a lot of dots spread out very far. But what I want to do is I want to zoom in on this. And I want you to go to that URL, mappingdemo.azurewebsites.net. Let me go to it with my other browser real quick. See if another dot pops up. Is it popping up? Pardon? Oh, there we go. So all the dots are popping in. See what's happening? Now imagine if you're a dispatcher, if you're a taxi company dispatcher, and you want to know where everybody is. You could use something like this. They could have a device in their car that was sending messages up to the SignalR hub. And in this case, what's actually happening is we're making these requests over Web API. We're actually, I think we are. I think that's what I ended up doing in this guy. Yeah, we are. This is actually kind of an important thing as well, because what we're doing is we're calling, every time you hit the site, you're actually calling back to the server using a Web API call. On the server side, we're actually calling the SignalR hub from the server side, from within the code. I want to show you this real quickly, because the first time I tried to do this, I went like crazy IOCDI. I was like creating all these services and sharing the services across my Web API and my SignalR hub, and I went over and I showed this demo off to Damien and David, and they were like, you're an idiot, man. Why did you go through all that trouble? We have this method on side of the SignalR host called GitHubContext. Okay? And this is that call right here. This is the post method that you're calling whenever you hit that page and it takes your lat long and sends it in. And this guy right here, all I'm doing is I'm saying globalhost.connectionManager.GitHubContext, and I pass it the hub that I want it to give me the context of. And what it does is it looks on the server and it says, hey, one of these hubs has already been instantiated. I'm just going to hand him back the instance of that hub so that he can just call methods off of it. And then what I do is I go down here and I call location received, and I just pass it the parameters, and then they get bubbled up to the client. I wanted to show you this because don't go through the rigmarole of creating your own dependency resolver for Web API, a dependency resolver for SignalR, loading in all your services and sharing them back and forth. On the server side, you can just call GitHub context, and it's going to bubble that call right up to the server, or right up to the client. Okay? I'm going to point that out. Oh, shucks. All right, there we go. Now I'm going to close this guy down and open up the next one. Somebody's probably writing a bot to hit that over and over and over and over and over again. That's not what I wanted. Authorization and SignalR. Okay. Next thing I'm going to talk to you about is how you can do authorization with SignalR. There we go. We'll come back to that in a little while and see how many thousands of dots are up there, and then I'll look at my Azure bill and faint. Okay. So I want to talk about authorization with SignalR. Why is that valuable? because you're going to want to have a secure site that your users are going to want to do in the real time over. You're only going to want to bubble the messages back to the server and up to the client for the users that have the authority to be able to do that. One of the new things that we added in SignalR2 was support for authorization in the ASP.NET runtime. So now you can actually use some of the authorization stuff that we already have and authorize your clients back and forth to SignalR so that you don't have to just leave that open all the time. I want to show you how you do that real quick. So I've got this app right here, just a quick little web app, and I'm going to run this guy real quick. And there's kind of a contrived demo. What I'm doing is I just took the SignalR template, which is the hello, and I'm just going to call hello back to the client. And whenever the SignalR hub calls the client, calls the hello method, I'm just going to pop an alert box that says hello. A little bit contrived, but this isn't a very complicated demo. I just want to show you that you can indeed authorize SignalR. Now, you see that I'm not logged in right now, okay? So what I want to do is I want to log in, and I've wired this up so that I can log in using Google. So I just click Google, and that'll log me in. So now I'm logged in, and we're going to go ahead and pop hello there. So what I want to do now is I want to go over here to my hub and show you how hard it is for you to do authorization with SignalR. Authorize. Now I'll build it. I think I can put it on the class level. And now what I'll do is I'll go over here and I'll just hit refresh. Now I'm logged in, so we should see hello. So all well and good. And now I'm going to log off. See what's happening? Since I've put that authorize attribute on top of my hub, I'm not going to be able to call that hub unless I am logged in. Why is that valuable? Because, well, if you're using SignalR on your client, you don't want users to be able to connect, you know, like people that are just browsing your site publicly who aren't logged in and don't want to, you know, who aren't authorized to use the services that you're exposing through SignalR. They're going to be talking to your hubs. And that's just, you know, memory overhead and whatever else. So you only want to let people use the hub that, you know, you've authorized. And we've made that really, really easy using the built-in stuff that's inside of ASP.NET. All right. Cool. Now, one of the things I said earlier should give you a little bit of cause for concern. And that's that SignalR hubs are server-bound. Okay, what that means is whenever you create a SignalR hub instance, it's going to live on your web server. One server. So what if I'm hosting my stuff in the cloud and I've got 10 instances, or I'm running on a web farm? What do you think is going to happen? Exactly what you think is going to happen. It's not going to be a pretty picture. Here's what goes on. If you want to do this, you're going to have to use what's called a backplane. And I want to show you how these backplanes work. For the first year that I presented SignalR, I'd get 5 minutes into the talk, and at least seven hands would go up, and they would say, tell me how to use backplane. At that point, the backplanes were kind of still in prototype mode. Now we've got a few of them out there. Here's how they work. So let's say you've got a multiple, you're running on one web server. Client A makes a request, client B makes a request, and the messages are going to get bounced right back to each individual user because you're only going to be running on top of one web server, so all the users are going to hit that same web server. Well, let's say you drop in another web server. What do you think is going to happen? They're going to make requests, and they're only going to get back themselves because they've hit individual servers. How do you fix that problem? You drop in a backplane. We have three backplanes. If you're running in Azure, you'd probably want to use the Service Bus backplane. It's going to be the fastest. That's that top icon. You could also use Redis if you wanted to. If you're hosting in Azure, you could use Redis. If you're hosting somewhere else, you could use Redis as well. If you're hosting in-house, you could use Redis because you could download the Redis client, turn it on like, you know, an XE inside of your network. It's pretty fast. The first time they wrote the Redis backplane was during that same interview. I was 10 minutes late to the interview, and when I got there, David Fowler just goes, bam, on his keyboard one time, and he goes, cool, got the Redis backplane. And I said, how long did that take you? He looked at his watch, and he goes, well, you were 10 minutes late. I figured I had time. So he wrote the Redis backplane, the first incantation of it, in 10 minutes because I was late to the show. And then he demoed it, and it worked. It's pretty impressive. The guy's a rocket scientist. If you're not into Redis or you're not running on Azure, you don't want to use Service Bus, there's another option, and that's the option that I'm going to show you today. It's SQL. So you could actually use a SQL database backplane so that all your messages are going to be routed through SQL. Oh, does that mean it's slow? No, not at all. It's very, very fast. Okay? Here's how that works. Client A makes a request. It's going to hit that web server. The SignalR backplane is going to light up, and then it's going to send all those messages back to all those servers where all those hubs are also listening. So that's how the backplane kind of solves this problem. So how do we demonstrate this? Well, I'm not going to deploy an application out to Azure and, you know, slide the slider all the way to the right and add 10 instances. I'm going to do this locally on my computer here. All right. Now, what I've got is I've got this very, very simple app right here, and this is the chat app. Best way to show the backplaning is through a chat app, because you've got to have those multiple users talking back and forth and sending messages. So that's actually what we're going to do in here. Apologies. I really try hard not to do a chat app. Afterwards, if you have a better idea for this, tell me. I'll drop the chat app. So I'm going to go ahead and open up my Global ASAX, because this is a little bit older and I'm still doing it in Global. Oh, I guess I'm not. There's my startup. I'm going to open this guy up, and you'll see right here that I've got the setup scale out method. All you have to do to dial in one of the backplanes, just like everything else in SignalR, you look at globalhost.dependencyresolver, and the guys have made it very convenient. They basically set all these things up as extension methods. So if I had imported the Redis backplane NuGet package, you'd see use Redis there. If I had pulled in the Windows Azure backplane package, you would see use Service Bus here. Kind of hard to screw that up, right? All you need is a connection string, and you're ready to go. Speaking of a connection string, I should probably go ahead and make a database so we can be able to do this here. I'm going to go ahead and put that stuff back to the way it was. You'll see that I've got this guy commented out. Now, what I'm going to do is I have two batch scripts, and these batch scripts are going to instantiate instances of this website on two different ports using IIS Express. Where's my database name? The first time you see it, I'm actually not going to be using the backplane, and that's to show you the first slide from that demo when things don't work. I want to show you the table list here. There's no tables in the database. They're actually going to create those for you on the fly. So let me just do a compilation here to make sure we've got the latest bits. I want to run server A. I want to run server B. And now I'm going to pop open my browser here, and I want to go to localhost 9091. I'm going to pop open another one. I'm going to go to localhost 9090. So I've got the same site hosted on two instances of IIS. If I send messages, oh, bummer. You told me it would work, and it's just not working. Why isn't it working? It's not working because I have not yet enabled this backplane. I'm going to go ahead over here, and I'm going to close down both these instances of IIS because I need to restart the server whenever I make this change. Stop it. All right. Do a quick little build of this guy real quick. And now I'm going to go back over here and I'm going to rerun these guys. And what you'll see here now that the app is started up is that SignalR's backplane feature has already added all the tables that it's going to use to route those messages back and forth. So it's already done all that work for you. Okay. Now if I go back into my clients here, I'll refresh this one. I'll refresh this one. And now we should see messages going back and forth. So now I've shown you how, if you're running in a web farm or if you're running in the cloud with multiple instances, you can drop in a backplane, and that backplane will distribute your messages back to all the individual servers. Does that make sense? Anybody had that question as you've been watching things? Is it bound on the server? What am I going to do? Cool. Do you run a web farm? How many servers? Many. Banking? Okay. Healthcare. Cool. Good stuff. All right. Last demo that I'm going to show you. You've kind of seen it. It's been more implied than anything else throughout these demos, because what we're doing is we're actually using Owen on the server side to host SignalR. But what I'm going to show you now is how you could actually use Owen on the server side by just creating your very own, host console app. So I want to walk through that process right now. Now, the idea behind this is you bring down all the Owen self-hosting capabilities. They're all just NuGet packages. You bring down the SignalR self-hosting stuff, and then you can use Owen inside of an XE, however you want to, just like you did on the web server side when you made that startup class. The only difference is you're going to run that startup class explicitly inside of your console XE, and then you'll be able to make connections back out to that hub from any client. Flip back over to me real quick. Now, what I've got here is I've got this host app show you the packages from this guy real quick. Really the important one is going to be this guy right here, the SignalR self-host package. Now again, all this stuff is NuGet. You can pull all these packages down for free and party on them as soon as you're done with this session and you're excited to go play with it. Just do a quick search on NuGet for SignalR and you'll see all the different things that are out there. And again, if you want more documentation, you can go out to asp.net/signalr and learn how to do everything. We have many, many, many demos out there. Now, just like before, I've got this startup class inside of my little console exe. And I just want to point out that we do support cores inside of Owen and the SignalR self-hosting. Now, in this case, what I'm going to do is I'm just going to say allow everybody. I don't care who can connect to me. Everybody can connect to me. If you wanted to be explicit about that, you could dial this in configuration or you could dial this in C#. I could say foo.com, can say bar.com, and nobody else can if I want to. I can control that very low level using cores if I want. Okay, and all that's supported not only in Azure, but by Web API and everything else. So it's going to show you that I can do that. And then I've got this program file right here, which is actually the runner. And what's going to happen is I'm going to take this URL, and then I want to, sorry, I can't draw. I'm going to actually call the webapp.start method. I'm going to pass it that URL. And what that's going to do is it's going to find that startup class, run that startup class, and dial in my SignalR hub for me. Now, in this case, my SignalR hub is pretty simple. What I've got is a server-side clock. Here's my clock hub. It's got a timer. It's going to fire every second, and it's going to bubble up to the clients and tell the clients what time it is. Maybe we need to rob a bank, and we just need to make sure that our clocks are synced before we actually go in and, you know, take all their money. Who knows? All right, so I've got this guy running right here. And now what I'll do is I'll show you that this is a default.html page. This is no server-side logic in this particular page. If I open this guy up, you're going to see that I've installed one package into this empty web project, and that's the ms.aspnet.signalr.js package. What that's going to do is it's going to bring down jQuery, and it's going to bring down the SignalR stuff that I need, SignalR jQuery plugin, and I'm going to be ready to go. And then I just put those JavaScript files into my HTML page, and I dial up my hub, and I party. I'll go ahead and open this guy up real quick, and we'll see right here that there's one difference in the way I'm instantiating this hub connection. I'm actually providing it a URL. And what you can do using SignalR whenever you're creating your hub connection, either in .NET or in JavaScript, is you can pass it whatever URL is hosting your SignalR hub. The nice thing about that is it basically supports cross-site scripting. That's kind of a dangerous term for some people, but you don't need to worry about that because you've got cores enablement with the SignalR host. So you can specify the domains that can get to your SignalR hub so that you don't have to worry about cross-site scripting attacks or anything of that nature. I just want to point out that we do have that capability. Now, after that, I'm going to create my hub proxy, and whenever the hub tells me to show the time, I'm just going to draw the time right there on the screen. Now, in this case, I'm going to have to run the host app first. So I'm just going to go ahead and run that guy, and it's just going to say the server's running. Everybody's happy. Then I'll go over here, and I'll run my, I'm actually going to make this a little larger. Make it 80. Now I'm going to right-click this particular page, and I'm going to say, actually, I should just do the project, do debug, start new instance. Now this guy's going to open up, and it's going to show us the time. So as the hub is running in my console exe, every couple of seconds it's going to send me the time, and I'm just going to display the time right there in my web browser. I could do the same thing from .NET code. I could actually reach out to my self-hosted SignalR hub and communicate with it from a .NET application if that was really what I wanted to do. Maybe I have a mobile app with the time on it or something like that. Who knows? You could just do synchronization. To prove to you that this is actually working and I don't have JavaScript here that's just showing you the time, let's go ahead and stop the hub. You'll see what happens? So yes, SignalR is powerful enough to bend space-time. Okay, just want to point that out. Cool. All right. Surprisingly, we're done already. Done about 15 minutes early, so we might have time for questions. I want to thank you for your time today. Thank you for staying, especially those of you who've already partied with SignalR, and this might have been a little bit low level for you. If I didn't get into some of the stuff that you wanted to learn about, I'll be here the rest of the day. We can chat it up. You can hit me up on Twitter. I can introduce you to the SignalR guys. Party on. So, thanks. If you have any questions, I'll just stay until the clock says zero. Feel free to step up to the mic or just come on up and we'll chat. Thanks. Enjoy Tech Ed.